Warning. The following podcast contains language which may be considered offensive. It's all Molly's fault. Brought to you by Black Knight, it's the technology.ie podcast. Episode 42 for August 31st, 2012. With Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinchon. Dias Marivagas, Kith Falch Roivistach. Hello, welcome to technology.ie. My name's Conor Muinchon in the Edgecast Media Studio. And on the internets, via Skype, it's Michaela Nealon, our co-host and sponsor. Hi, Michaela.
Hi, Con. How's it going?
In a hotel room this week, where are you off to?
I'm off to London for the weekend to the Design Bond exhibition over in the Barbican.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that before, and we'll talk to you more about that as well. But first, we have a guest this week. Hello, Damien Molly.
Con, how's it going?
I'm good, and you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Good. Where are you? Are you at home? Are you travelling?
I'm in Cork. I'm not travelling at the moment. It's quiet season for me, so it all kicks off for me in about 2 or 3 weeks' time, and then it'll be 3 or 4 days travel a week.
We're going to talk to you about that and what you have coming up work-wise. We're going to talk about the Irish Web Awards, which is coming up. We're going to talk about what's in the news today. Minister Pat Rabbit from the Department of Communications announced a national broadband plan. And you're someone that has expressed a lot of views on broadband in the past, and we'll talk more about that. That's the main course in our show tonight. Lots of other cool stuff to talk about. And Michaela, you've been making the news as well with the announcement that you're building a data centre in Carlow, no less.
Yes. The cat is out of the bag. not exactly the best kept secret in tech, but we're building a data centre in Carlow. It's very green, because what we'll be doing is we found a use for the wonderful Irish weather. So we'll be using Ireland's nice, cool, temperate climate to provide air cooling for all the servers, which means basically cheaper for us to run it. And it's a modular pod type thing. So we'll be slotting pods into the building rather than going off and, you know, building out a huge, big data center that will be a nice, big, empty space until we fill it.
Fantastic. Fantastic. We're going to ask you more about that and modular pods and slotting and air cooling and things like that. It sounds very exciting. But let's talk about some of the news this week. The president of those United States of America, was on Reddit yesterday, Michaela, and attracting all kinds of attention. Your reaction was wow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look at Irish politicians and their interactions on social media. You can look at some of the European politicians and their interactions on social media and elsewhere, and you're left kind of scratching your head a little bit and kind of going, I don't know, ah, bless, or something. I don't know. I mean, some of them are pretty good and kind of, and are quite engaging, but a lot of them fail miserably. I don't know what Damien's take on it would be.
He's commander in chief, and he's chief marketing officer in command as well. It was a clever idea, but if you go and look at the actual questions that were asked and the questions that he answered, he avoided anything controversial whatsoever. So it was good though. I mean, it gets to the right demographic. You could never see a Republican candidate do stuff like that, or even, you know, be allowed to do something like that.
Why? What's the difference in your view?
As time progresses, I'd be very mistrustful of Obama now. Mm. I think he's very slick in terms of PR and communications, and it did its job perfectly. It crashed Reddit. It got attention for about 24 hours into a demographic that probably didn't want to vote Republican and would maybe vote for Democrat, and this could be pushing him in there. Mm. The Republicans just they want to go after the God fearing people, not the godless people, and I would probably think that for a lot of them, the likes of Reddit users would not be their demographic, and they'd never want to interact. I mean, these are the people that would probably happily enforce, again, internet censorship, just internet monitoring and everything like that. So.
This is interesting. No, it's very interesting insight. So Democrats and liberals use Reddit. What do conservatives use? Facebook?
Fox News. they use Facebook, and there's plenty of uses there. But for a lot of them, I think it wouldn't be Reddit like type sites. It would be traditional, or we'd call them traditional, I guess, discussion forums and those just right leaning places. Or if you ever there's a couple of Facebook pages that are hilarious, and that tells you maybe more about Republicans. There's a Facebook page, Tactical Defense Gear, and there's another one from Glock. And you just, like, it's just pictures of people with guns and, you know, over our dead body kind of status updates, and like 10,000 people like that status update. And then it delves into anti-Obama stuff quite quickly.
It's interesting, but I mean, in fairness, I think you can get a Facebook page for just about any position, stance or political viewpoint. But it's interesting to sort of ask the question, you know, what is the political color of geeks, or what is the political color of people who are technologically minded, or people who use social media? Are there different types of social media associated with different political viewpoints? Libertarianism is something that tends to get associated with techies to an extent. It doesn't really, or what's your view on that?
As you were saying that as well, like, I mean, one of the main people in Obama's campaign, I think, was that guy, Chris Hughes, who was one of the co-founders of Facebook. So he wasn't in the social network movie, but he was a core part of it. Joined the Obama campaign, made a fortune from his Facebook shares. So the tech that was in Facebook and the technology was kind of used in the Obama campaign. So whether the voters were on Facebook or not, the tech on gathering people together was definitely used by Obama. Libertarians, they're an interesting lot. I think Ron Paul would be their person. And again, they use the internet quite well to just get a lot of attention for that man that's been around for 20 or 30 years at this stage and kind of never got anywhere. Mm. But the past American election, you know, polled quite strongly enough, and I think it was because of the internet and because of all these people talking about them, building websites, just creating their own content as well.
It's something, though, I think in this country, Michele, wouldn't you agree that the mainstreaming of technology and social media is something that has happened, even looking back to the last year, the presidential election, Sean Gallagher, Twittergate, as it was called. Most recently, Damien, we were talking about the Chris Andrews story here a couple of weeks ago, which I thought was fascinating. But Twitter has really, Michele, hasn't it, become kind of mainstream, hasn't it, in terms of politics? Social media has become mainstream, even in Ireland.
Oh, yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, you're, like, you know, that's asking about, say, people in technology. I mean, I know quite a few people in the domain industry who use both Facebook and Twitter, and some of them are extreme Republicans, some of them would be Democrats. I mean, a lot of the people I deal with would be Americans. Mm. Over here, a lot of the Irish politicians are using Facebook and Twitter, and some of it is very much kind of this is a party political broadcast type rubbish, whereas others, I think, are actually genuinely trying to engage. And it's interesting to see them kind of, you know, trying to engage, getting their heads bitten off, and, you know, some of them come back, some of them. I think it's an interesting thing to watch, that kind of development.
No doubt about it. That wasn't the first story on our running order for tonight's programme, but it was the one that I kind of jumped to, so sorry about that. Let's get back into sequence, Michele. You're excited, you wanted to talk about this new Logitech range of music devices which have been launched with support for Spotify and other online music services.
Yeah, well, this is one of the things. I mean, I like music. I listen to music all day long. I mean, I have, hundreds of CDs. I have a Spotify account, which I use all the time. I've got I've had a Last.fm account for years. And, you know, I love the idea of being able to, you know, use those services wherever I am. And, you know, a lot of the devices that are coming out now are getting more and more integrations with Last.fm and Spotify and a bunch of these ones. One that Logitech announced today, I was just looking at, you know, some of the services that they're supporting. It's amazing. I mean, they've got pretty much every single music service on there that you could think of. And, you know, some of them I wouldn't even have heard of. But, I mean, out-of-the-box support for Pandora, Last.fm, Deezer, Mog, Rhapsody, TuneIn, Slacker, Sirius, Spotify, and a whole load of online radio. I mean, it's, you know, it's people say sometimes, you know, radio might be dead, traditional media dead. It's not really. It's just kind of, it's morphing into something else in a lot of respects.
Yeah, but whether we use, I mean, you know, we can access these things obviously on our PCs, on our laptops, and our Macs. We can access them on apps on our mobile devices and that. This is a different approach, really. It's you know, it's an appliance. It's a dedicated piece of hardware which hooks into these kind of services. Do you think that's the way to go?
It depends on the situation, Con. I mean, like, I used to have a cheap and nasty alarm clock radio, and it was one of those things where if the wire was a bit loose, you wouldn't be able to get the radio, which of course meant I'd oversleep. So about a year and a half ago or so, I upgraded to a Roberts radio with all the funky gadgets and doodads on it, so that it's an alarm clock radio, but it hooks into Last.fm and supports DAB and everything else. But it doesn't support Spotify. And I was just like, you know, for me, it'd be great, you know, go to bed with a book or whatever and be able to listen to the music I'd be listening to on my desktop. I could do it on my mobile, but, you know, that's just not the same thing, Con. I like the idea of a physical device.
What about you, Damien? Are you a user of Spotify and similar services?
I'm not, actually. I've never gotten into it. I used Spotify for a while when they wouldn't allow us in Ireland to have it, and you went through your dodgy proxy server and all of that, and it was fine for a while. But yeah, I just kind of lost touch with it. Nowadays I'm actually just listening to radio. I should get back into it. I think it's just a case of just me bothering to sign back into the system. But I normally now just switch from one web radio to the next. So, you know, from Phantom in the morning, and then I go and switch to Lyric, and then I switch back to Phantom.
You've always been good, Damien, I know, you've been a prolific blogger, but one of the things I've often noticed is that you have a habit of blogging music videos and things like that from time to time. How do you discover music? Is it currently through radio?
It is. I don't know. So backstory to this is I started listening to Lyric FM. I got a car earlier this year, and I hadn't been driving really for a while because I was using public transport. I got rid of my car, so I got a car. And I just started listening to Lyric because I'm one of these drivers, and everyone's going to say, wow, there's no surprise there. But I shout a lot at people's driving and their inability to drive properly. So I thought Lyric would be a good way of calming me, so I'd shout less. And I do shout a bit less. But I've discovered a whole new range, I think, of music, world music, Irish music, classical music, because of that. And later on, I come home and I look up the playlist. Free radio station just now. You can see the playlist of the show quite quickly afterwards. Look it up then on YouTube and start playing it on YouTube. And then if needs be, I'll probably end up buying the album or streaming it, because a lot of these bands are on SoundCloud. I said it to someone before, and I'd love if there was some sort of Facebook like button or some sort of like button on a car radio, so that when you hear a tune in the car, press a button and it's stored somewhere then to say, look at this music later on. That would be a handy little feature, I think.
Well, that's right back to the appliance model, I suppose, in relation to this and to this new range of Logitech devices, Michele. They don't have a like button on them, do they?
They probably do. Yeah. I mean, the Roberts radio, which I have at the moment, does have the option. You can actually, you know, do a whole bunch of things with it. This one, you know, I was just poking around a little bit earlier, just looking at what was on the site, but it looks to me like it's got a lot of controls. There could be something there. And to Damien's point about on the car, if you look at Wired magazine and a couple of those ones, you'll find ads in there now for some of the pretty high-end US cars. I mean, great big monsters of yokes. I think some of those actually have that kind of crazy integration at some level. It might not be as simple as a little like button, but it's not far off it.
Big news of the week, you could kind of miss it, or you could be forgiven for falling asleep, because these patent disputes between Apple and Samsung in particular have dragged on for so long. But a verdict was announced this week in the United States in the case between Apple and Samsung, and it was pretty unequivocal, wasn't it really, Michele? Apple have been ripped off by Samsung in terms of copying the design of the iPad and similar devices, and they have to pay a billion, I should say, in compensation.
Yeah, I mean, Damien, I think, was live tweeting the court case there the other night. So, I mean, he's been more up to speed than I am. But, I mean, the thing that caught my eye was that somebody did a spoof a couple of days later about how Samsung were planning on sending the $1 billion in coins to Apple. This would be kind of Samsung's revenge. We'll pay you, but we'll do it very painfully. And quite a few people, I think, were duped by that. I don't know if you saw that one, Damien.
Yeah, Today FM this evening actually reported on that as being fact. So they got spoofed as well.
But of course, Damien, this is going on worldwide in different jurisdictions, isn't it? And I mean, more to the point, Samsung is Korean, aren't they? And I think there's a case going on in Korea which seems to be going the other way in Samsung's favour.
Yeah, well, so obviously it was their home turf, so they probably had home turf advantage. But I think the judge actually told both of them to just get lost in the end. That they both, you know, they drew by getting kicked out of court. It's happening, I think, in Germany. I think there's 9 cases going on at the moment. So, Australia, I think, is another place that it's happening in too. So it's all to do with IP. It's all to do with patents, and it's a war. And I remember when Steve Jobs announced the iPhone first, and so he unveils it, and he said, "And boy, have we patented everything in this." And I mean, someone was saying as well, for every iPhone that's sold, Nokia gets something like $10 in licensing fees for the technology. I know for HTC Android devices, Microsoft gets $1 per phone as well. So it's all this kind of money in the background through patents. And it's probably a testament really to the patent systems in many countries, that like you can patent code or you can patent a beveled corner on a communications device. That's kind of ridiculous. But I think that's what's happening.
But fair is fair, Damien, on the other hand, really, isn't it? I mean, you know, Nokia's getting the royalties, Microsoft are getting the royalties. You know, they did the R&D, they did the innovation, they came up with stuff. You know, you've got to be able to profit from your innovation, profit from your invention. And you know, the argument, I suppose, in favour of the patent system is that it allows other people to use your designs, but license them.
Well, yeah, there is the idea of licensing, and I guess the issue is, again, if you go against the patents, because some crowd just won't give you the license because they've grabbed it. But we all know how ridiculous some of those patents are. The Amazon one-click patent, I think, was the famous one. I mean, you know, websites that wouldn't be allowed to have an efficient checkout system because Amazon owes a patent for that, or anything software-related, really, is that there are huge issues with that.
But this came down really simply to the devices in people's hands in a way. I mean, I'm here looking at my Samsung Galaxy Ace phone, and if you stand far enough away, you know, you can't tell nowadays what kind of black rectangle people have in their hands or in their pockets until you get up close. You know, Apple revolutionised the look and feel, if you want to use that term, of these kind of devices, changed the game, and everyone else has piled on.
Oh yeah, I mean when the iPhone came out first, and Nokia going, look, that's just high end stuff, you know, most people are going to go for this. It's a rectangular piece of glass is what we all have, and every phone manufacturers bring that out. And I mean, I don't think people are stupid. Like when it comes to, you know, getting an iPhone or getting a Galaxy, they may go for a Galaxy because it's cheaper and it's almost like the iPhone. But it's, again, it's like kids in the playground, you know, Nike or Puma or one of the other brands. They all know which is the real brand. But yeah, I mean, some of this as well is just a slow people down, like with these patents, because things will change anyway in the next couple of years. There'll be new shapes, there'll be new technology and so on, new interfaces. So it's, I think it's more a thing of slowing down the competition. Apple is the one that's still innovating, really, bringing stuff out. They're always a year ahead or maybe 18 months ahead of the likes of Samsung for stuff. So they're always playing catch-up, which can be, that's a serious advantage too, and I guess patents will help that. But the worry would be that if they're able to get patents on everything, it's the lawyers that are going to win at the end. I mean, there was a thing there a while back, I think, where was it Microsoft and Apple teamed up or something so that Google couldn't get patents from Norcom, and then Google goes off and buys stuff from Motorola or buys Motorola to get the patents. And it's, you know, if you look at the flow of money then that's happening, it's generally, you know, lawyers, I think, are getting their 10% or their 20% for all that kind of stuff. And it seems a shame that the money spent on all these legal fees and licensing terms, imagine if that was just poured directly into pure innovation.
Yeah, but again, I mean, the innovators and the inventors would argue, what's the point in innovating? What's the point in coming up with new ideas if you can be ripped off the following day?
Well, it's time to market. This is the thing. Like, if you, and they complain, like, you know, people say if you send something over to China, like, you know, they can have it copied within 24 hours. But something as complicated as an iPhone, even when you give them all the parts and they reverse engineer it, it's still going to take a good bit of time to you know, catch up and bring it out. And I think Samsung was like a 12 months later or something. So I don't know. There's the advantages of patents, but there's also, you know, keep on innovating, innovate or die. And if you're going to sell the same product for years and years and years, that's not really innovation either. And people get bored of it.
So are you arguing, Damien, would you be of the viewpoint that certain types of design, certain types of innovation should not be patentable? I mean, you mentioned software, for example. You mentioned one click. A lot of people do feel that software patents shouldn't be allowed, for example. Would you be arguing for things like that? And would you extend that perhaps to the look and feel, I suppose, or the design?
There's elements of your design, I think, that it's okay for a competitor to copy or to rip off. Now, if you're doing, as people said, with, I think there's a jury said, this case in particular, that if you remove the badges from the phones and even, you know, press the home screen, you pretty much couldn't tell the difference. And it's that idea of, you know, of just trading on the exact same design or, you know, or just diluting the brand. That is the issue, the amount of issues. The same way if someone, you know, built a Web Awards website that looked the exact same or decided to bring out another awards and call it the Web Awards Ireland, for example, and had pretty much the same logo, I'd have big issues with that because my customers might go elsewhere thinking that it's the same crowd or they've licensed the stuff from me. But I mean, the whole idea of an award ceremony, you know, recognizing websites, I wouldn't have an issue with that. And I wouldn't have an issue with, you know, people running the event around the same time, having the same categories, for example. So it's that kind of difference. If it's too much, and if it's just a complete another knockoff, there's issues there. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, little things like beveled corners, I wouldn't have an issue with that. You know, yeah, touch screen, I wouldn't have an issue with that. The way you pull down the menu and it refreshes, you know like on the iPhone, I think they have the patent for that now, and nobody else can do it. That came from
one app, I think, didn't it? Was it? I can't remember. Was it
one of the Twitter apps? I think.
I think it was Tweety or something was the first, perhaps, that might have had something similar to that. I could be wrong.
No, I think it was. I think it was outside, and all of a sudden, Apple manages, you know, to have a patent on it.
And then the whole pull down notifications and all of that in fact has gone the other way from Android. That was an Android innovation, which was there before. It's now, you guys that use iPhones now have that as well.
Yeah. And I've seen other things as well from Android creep into Apple, and Apple denying, you know, that they robbed it from there. They're inspired like everybody else, I guess. So And we're going to have this. We're going to have this trade-off, I think, and it's a bit of an arms race, really.
Michele, $1 billion. You know that Samsung have to pay Apple. In a way, it's not much in terms of the size of the overall market and how Samsung has really become the dominant player, and Android has really been very, very successful. You know, in a way, is this perhaps just? And there was reference, of course, during this trial as well to emails by executives which had been obtained through Discovery, which it could be argued on the one hand that Samsung were saying, you know, let's be inspired by Apple. It could be argued on the other hand that they said, you know, let's just go out there and blatantly copy what Apple are doing. And if that's what they did, you know, this might even be cheaper than licensing. This might have been a good strategy for Samsung, even though they've lost this case.
Well. Maybe, but I mean, you know, as Damien says, I mean, there's lines that you need to draw between a direct knockoff, carbon copy, ripoff, call it what you will, and, you know, just taking an element. I mean, in my little world of domains, a lot of the registrars are hit by patent suits by a company called Reserve, and what they're going after are things like a method for the automated renewal of domain names. I mean, it's, you know, it's like the click thing. I mean, the Amazon click-through thing and all the, and the various things like that. I mean, it's, how can you actually patent that? And even if you do patent it, how can you hope to enforce that patent? I mean, there have to be lines.
Well, it's one of the criteria for granting a patent is that it's got to be not obvious. And, you know, you really couldn't say that very many of the patents that are out there, especially in the region of software and internet, you really would have difficulty arguing that these are not obvious innovations. But it seems it's easier to shoot first and ask questions later, get the patent, and it costs money then for people to go to court and challenge these.
Oh, it does. But I mean, you know, the thing about the patents is that there's differences. It's the same with trademarks. You know, that not all trademark offices handle trademarks in the same fashion. So, for example, here in Europe, you can get a trademark in Benelux in about 48 to 72 hours. You know, you go online, you apply, you provide a bit of information. A couple of hours later, you make a payment, and you know, 72 hours later, that trademark is yours. Whereas if you go to register a trademark in Ireland or in the US, you have to go through an entire process. You submit it. They might come back with questions on it. And, you know, from initial application all the way through to actually being given the trademark can take several months. And, you know, the same, I think, seems to happen with patents, though I don't have as much direct experience of them. But, you know, the US Patent Office has granted patents for things that were in software particularly that make no sense when you look at it. It's just going, you know, what's original about this? I mean, loads of other companies have done it, and there's probably other patents out there that are very similar. So I don't know. I think there's some companies that are making money just by getting patents and then suing other companies or getting licensing fees for that. I mean, it can hinder innovation. It can hinder innovation because, as Damien says, I mean, the only people making money out of a lot of this are the lawyers.
You're listening to technology.ie, the podcast. That's the website you'll find it on, and lots of cool stuff there as well. You've blogged about an internet minute. We'll talk about that in a minute, Michele, and a few other things. It's sponsored by Black Knight by Michele Nealon, and you've got some cool news this week, Michele, which I'm going to talk to you about. A new data centre, and you're inviting customers to fly their Irish flags proudly as well. We'll talk about that in a minute. Our guest this week is none other than Damien Mulley of, Mulley Communications and all kinds of cool stuff. The Irish Web Awards is coming up, and we're going to talk about the government's new broadband plan in part two of the show as well. Before we get into talking about this week's Black Knight special offers and that, Michele, two other quick and cool things you've blogged on the website. One of those is the Internet Minute, and the other is in relation to election insights on Facebook and CNN. We talked about Amazon tracking what kind of political biographies are being bought, and you can see there's red states and blue states in relation to that. What are these other tools in relation to Twitter, Facebook and CNN?
Well, this caught my attention. Facebook and CNN have teamed up to do what they're calling election insights. So what they're doing is they're using the Facebook insights that you'd get, say, on a Facebook page. They're taking all that data from across the entire Facebook platform to see, you know, which candidates people are talking about, whether the sentiments are positive or negative. And they produce this entire kind of dashboard thing. And you can go on, you can see, you know, Obama and all the others, and, you know, whether it's positive, negative. It's just fascinating to see the kind of, you know, mining the social graph, the Facebook graph for this data. And Twitter has done something quite similar. Okay. I'm not too sure if they've teamed up with anybody or not.
You can see that on the
blog. They launched something a few weeks ago.
You can see that.
I just thought to myself, I just think it's interesting that they're able to use this kind of real-time data from such a large, I don't know, sample, I suppose, is a word one might use. I mean, it's not, they're not waiting for these polls that are, you know, so selective. I mean, I don't know, have any of you, either of you ever been polled by anybody for any of these political polls? I know I haven't. But with something like this, you don't have to be polled, because if you mention a politician, if you mention something, a preference for something, that data is there, it's available, and I can feed back into this bigger thing. I mean, of course, I'm sure it could be aimed as well.
That's the kind of thing, really, Damien, that you talk about as well in your business. You know, you're explaining to people from a marketing and business point of view, you can read the trends from what people are talking about in social media, whether it be politics or marketing or customer support.
Yeah, it's this idea of just sifting the data and being able to analyze that. And you could, there's actually, I think UCC are actually, there's some course now that will teach you to be a data scientist or something. But the sentiment that people are using and are disclosing so easily in social media, whether on Facebook or Twitter, means that it can be a cheap way for a company to analyze if people are liking what you do or aren't doing it, reacting and so on. And I know, like, American politics in particular, you know, the State of the Union address, they monitor people, they see what their reaction is, a minute-by-minute breakdown of it. And, like, the State of the Union and speeches like that can dictate what the policy is for, you know, the biggest country in the world in terms of power and strength and arms and everything like that.
One more thing on the website this week on technology.ie. Michele, what happens in an internet minute?
I think that graphic's been floating around for some time. It's not that new, but I think I saw a few people sharing it again during the week, and I was just looking at the figures. I mean, it's insane. I mean, the amount of data that's being shared per minute, the number of videos that are being uploaded, the number of tweets per minute, the number of just so many different things happening on the internet.
It's interesting. Email, it's an infographic there. You said Intel are behind this, is it?
Yeah, Intel do some pretty cool stuff with infographics and mining data and everything else. But I mean, this one here, it was 100 new, in a minute, 1,300 new mobile users, 100 plus new LinkedIn accounts, 3,000 photos uploaded to Flickr, 100,000 new tweets, over 2 million search queries on Google. I mean,
and here's an interesting one, 20 new victims of identity theft.
Yeah, well, there's some nasty stuff as well. I mean, 135 botnet infections. I mean,
47,000 app downloads.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. It's cool. I mean, it's an infographic. Intel are behind it, as you say, and as you were saying, you think it's been around for a while, Michele. And it got blogged this week on technology.ie. Technology.ie is brought to you by Black Knight. Michele is managing director of Black Knight. And wow, Michele, big news this week and a great response you got to your announcement that you are building your own data center. You're leaders in the field of hosting and domains here in Ireland. But you've used other data centres, have located your servers in other data centres in Ireland and abroad up to this point.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment we've got equipment in two of the big data centres in Dublin, Interaction and Telecity. We also have a bit of equipment in a couple of other locations, but those are the two main ones. And one of the things that we've been looking at for the last couple of years was whether it would be feasible for us to build build our own data center in some shape or form. And, you know, the technology's moved on quite a bit. You know, the idea of going in, taking a building and putting in a data center throughout the entire building in one fell swoop, you can still do it, of course, but there's other ways of doing it. I mean, a few years back, companies start doing things like, you know, the data center in a container concept, the data center for the back of a truck type of thing. So you can build data centers now using a much more modular technology. And it's the idea of these kind of pods. So each pod would be kind of self-contained and hold space for racks and, you know, all the fiber connections and Ethernet cables and all that. So it's much more cost effective. And with the other technologies that have, you know, gone, it, a lot of technology has gone into cooling, because every time you turn on a computer, I mean, if you pick up your laptop, for example, you see it starts getting hot. So in a data center, there's a huge amount of heat that's produced, so you have to spend a lot of money to keep it cool. But the technology's moved on now, and you can pull in cold air from the outside and use that, which brings down your electricity bills. So it's pretty cool. It's exciting. It's we'll see what happens.
It's a great geek project.
Well, I think it's something we might need to get Paul on to talk at some point. Paul Kelly, our CTO, my business partner, he's the man who's been driving all this, because it's his big project for the last few months, has been working on this. So he can give you all the geektastic statistics and all the geektastic figures and on, you know, how many megawatts of power and how many cubic meters of air and all that kind of thing. He's got all the figures.
It was interesting to watch last week, Damien, when this was announced by Michele and Black Knight. A huge amount of goodwill, a great response to them, a pretty positive commentary in response to the press release and the tweets and the Facebooking and the blogging in relation to all of this. It's something you know, when it comes to social media and interacting with people online, it's something that Michele and Black Knight are pretty good at.
Yeah, absolutely. The fucking sandal-wearing hippies. But,
there it is. Okay, there's
a bad language alert.
There it is. That's fine. We've passed that threshold now. Let's all relax. And that's great. I can just relax now, for the rest of the show is going to hell. Go on anyway.
I, you know, it's brands like Black Knight, and I'm not just saying that because I want free stuff off Michele, but they're Irish, they're one of our own, and they're one of our own in terms of being an Irish company, but they're one of our own because they're on social media, where so many of us are oversharing and everything like that. And so when a company we all know is doing something like that, building something, so it's obviously, you know, going to create jobs and so on, people will back it. And as well, in the past couple of years, we need some good news instead of, like, you know, people in courier companies being shut out of their jobs and not getting their money and stuff. It's nice to see that. And I think there's a bit of kind of personal affinity with Paul and with Michele and Black Knight staff. So it's almost, you know, someone you know is doing this. And so it's interesting. Plus, again, you know, it helps the environment as well as another thing. And it's nice to see, I guess, a medium-sized Irish company build this instead of a multinational. You know, Facebook builds a big data center, or Microsoft or Google. It's nice to see, again, a native Irish company being able to do the same.
It's worth repeating, and Michele, I'm quoting your CTO, Paul Kelly, from your press release on this. On day one, our new data center will house 700 servers, and by the end of that project, the number will be 6,500. The project will also add several million euros to the local economy. Well done, lads, and jobs going along with it, I presume, Michele?
Well, I mean, if we can continue to expand, if we continue to you know, grow the business and, you know, everything else. I mean, obviously, we're going to be hiring more staff. And at the moment, most of our staff are based in Carlow. We've got a couple in other locations, but the bulk of the staff are, you know, in Carlow, and a bar one or two, they're all in Ireland. And, you know, we're committed to staying that way, being an Irish company as much as we can. We're 100% Irish owned. And, you know, jobs... For every person we employ, that means there's money going back into the local economy. It's not going overseas. It's not being
shipped off, and so we're not using Ireland as some kind of tax haven.
Now, if you're listening to this podcast for the first time, we should probably explain. This is the technology.ie podcast. It's sponsored by Black Knight and Michele, and owned by them and supported by them. And Michele takes part in it and pays all the bills as well. So every week we talk about this, and we blow a little bit of smoke up your hole, Michele. And this time, though,
this is how it starts.
This time, well, see, there you go. But this time, Michele, I think it's well deserved. So fair play. And just very briefly, will you mention this Fly the Irish Flag offer that you've got this week? Register or transfer your .ie for just €5.99. How are you doing it for that price?
Well, they have to buy hosting.
Oh, I see. So it's a special offer with the hosting.
It's a special offer with the hosting. You see, the thing is this, is that, look, being able to offer a discount, we like doing it, but we're not completely stupid. you have to buy hosting with it. But, I mean, look, a domain name without hosting, what's the point? Yeah. It doesn't serve any purpose on its own.
Okay, this is the shared hosting plans, the Minimus, Maximus, and what's the Medius is the middle one that you've got. Register or transfer your .ie for just €5.99 with all 1 year shared hosting plans. Find out more about that, Green Data Centres, and all the other cool stuff they do in Carlow at blackknight.com.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
You're still with us, Damien, yeah?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I'm just thinking what words to use next.
You're listening to technology.ie, the podcast brought to you by Black Knight. Michele Nealon is here, Managing Director of Black Knight. I'm Conor Muinicon, and I join him most weeks. And our special guest this week is Damien Mully of Mully.com, Mully Community. No, you tell me, Damien, how do you introduce yourself nowadays?
Just Google for Damien on Google. There you go.
There is only one.
People would wish that at least. I guess online communications. I changed my little spiel on Twitter a while back. I think I was saying I was going to threaten to do this, but my new spiel, because you know you have to make stuff up every now and again, is I help businesses and people get famous on the internet.
That's right, and some of them by accident, was it you said, or something?
Some of them don't want to be. No.
That's cool. Damien, we're going to talk to you about the Irish Web Awards and that's coming up as well. But we thought it was cool to talk to you this week in relation to the announcement today by the Minister, Pat Rabbit, Minister for Communications, Energy and Natural Resources, of yet another government national broadband plan with big targets and strategies and unbelievable deadlines and things like that in it. They're going to help the private industry to provide super fast broadband to all of the country, ultimately even places where commercial companies don't want to go, and they're putting public money in to help do that and all of that. And I thought of you, and when Michele said you were coming on, I thought of you, Damien, and I think many people would probably have first heard of you involved with an organisation called Ireland Offline, which was a way of drawing attention to the fact that back in those dark days, the vast majority of the country didn't have any kind of a reasonable connectivity to the internet. And here we are in 2012. Where are we at now, and what is this plan going to do for us?
So where are we at now? So Ireland Offline, I guess, kind of appeared, then disappeared for a while, came back. We decided to hand it over to other people, and it's kind of around in the background still. But the whole idea was to get whoever wanted broadband to campaign to get them broadband. And way back when it started, it was actually starting because the whole No Limit service that ESAP brought out was being hampered by regulation and telecom companies. We're getting broadband now. This plan from Minister Rabbit, I guess we can call it the new National Broadband Plan 2.0 Plus, is kind of saying the same thing we've heard for nearly what is a decade now. Faster broadband speeds, broadband rollout to more places, a minimum speed as well. So what they're saying is half the population will have nearly about 100 megabit speeds by 2015. That in smaller towns and villages, that it might be about 40 megabits, and but there will be a minimum, they're saying, of 30 megabits for everybody in the country.
Is that by 2015 as well?
And they're saying by 2015. Now, the European Union has already said by 2018 that this has to be a standard. So the government here now today are saying they'll roll it out faster. But the big issues here are, first of all, in urban areas like UPC, they're all getting 100 megabit. So my parents in their house, which is a couple of miles away from where I am now, they already have 100 megabits. So that's meant for the big urban centres. Whereas where I am, I can't get cable. I can only get DSL, and the maximum that can be pushed to right now is about 5 megabits. So I'm also, I guess, in an urban centre, and I can't get that. So they're saying they're going to push that. But the document today doesn't really show how that's going to happen. And they're talking about 4G wireless coming out, and how this is going to probably help. But the wireless experts have already been talking on discussion forums like boards, and they're saying it's not possible right now. So, you know, giving them the license, the licensing hasn't started yet. You know, awarding somebody a license, getting them, you know, help with the tech and so on, and getting it all in, it's going to happen by 2015. They're saying within the lifetime of the government, but I don't see it happening. And again, they're relying on this idea of wireless, that wireless will fill in all the other black spots. And that hasn't happened with this national broadband plan they already had. So the national broadband scheme, which was given to Tree, giving you broadband in rural areas, people are getting half a megabit or 1 megabit at most. And as more people join those wireless networks, the speed goes down. So we have had a good history of this. And I'm not confident saying that. Minister Rabbit is a better minister, and he's more aggressive when it comes to targets and working with all the stakeholders than Eamon Ryan, who's everybody's friend, but will never commit to anything.
It's funny. I mean, it's not funny, really. I'm not the most cynical person, to be honest with you, Damien, but today I was scoffing at this when it came out, because today I was asked to commentate on this on an interview on Radio na Gaeltachta today, and I did that from my office in the town of Kilkee in West Clare, where I work for a community radio station and where I'm involved with community and rural development in that place. The previous day, another community organisation had come into our building to test out the possibility of using our internet connection in order to run a training course, a basic entry level training course. This is being funded by the Department of Communications, I think by Minister Rabbit's department as well. It's called the Benefit 3 course, and it's being run all over the country at the moment. It is 6 hours of introduction to PCs and the internet. And the kind of people who can benefit from this are very often people who might not have been exposed to technology, who live in maybe isolated or disadvantaged areas such as Southwest Clare, and who really could benefit from this. And yet when the team from the community development organisation came to our building the other day to test to see if they could run a course for 8 people using our one megabit wireless internet service provider connection that we have there. It turned out that the connection wasn't up to it, you know. So I'm there in Kilkee, which is a town which is suffering from disadvantage and isolation, which could really do with you know, decent DSL, if you like, or 5 megabits, and we can't even put this on. Just down the road, our gateway to the rest of Ireland is through the town of Kilrush, which has one of these metropolitan area networks which isn't connected to anything, Damien.
So, yeah, okay. So the backstory, these metropolitan area networks, the idea was that there'd be a fibre ring going around the town, and it was meant for business areas and industrial estates. The industrial estates would plug into those fibre rings. Those fibre rings would have a backhaul, you know, into the ESP's fibre network. And so you could, in theory at least, have a town wired up for just proper, really, really like fast fibre broadband. And these were announced, co-funding, I think, from the European Union. And the politicians got involved. And all of a sudden, a Fianna Fáil councillor would push and push and push. And you got towns. And I think there's a famous one up in Mayo, some small little town in Mayo that obviously had strong Fianna Fáil connections. Mm.
they got a metropolitan area network, a fiber network built around the town, tiny little population, no industrial estates whatsoever, and cost maybe up to $1 million to dig that, put into the ground.
Yeah, but you know something? You could do that and you could attract industry there that would be interested in using that super fast fibre in the ground if only it was connected to some kind of equally fast backbone.
Yeah, and like so all these towns, 40 miles from the nearest bit of fibre, and I think that the cost during the Celtic Tiger was something like $500,000 per kilometre at least to dig this stuff and put it in. So it wasn't feasible. They looked at wireless and then that wasn't feasible too. So there's been about $500 million, I think, sunk into things in the ground in the past couple of years or so. If the politicians didn't get involved and if there wasn't all this politicking, we probably would have had a lot more towns actually connected up. Towns that maybe were big enough to sustain that. The famous story of eBay not going to Athlone because of the fibre connections. And this is what's happened. So this new thing, I don't think there's going to be as much political horse trading on this, but it also needs the backing of industry. So there's the promising $175 million if it's matched by private funds. But look, we've got telecoms companies now that are struggling worldwide. O2 was making a fortune in Ireland, and Vodafone. They're not investing as much. They're starting to share networks and everything. Aircom hasn't a penny to their name. I mean, they've gone bust so many times now and they have a couple of billion invests. I don't think they're going to be able to cough up the money either. So I think it's a Christmas list of a child more than anything else. I don't think a lot of this stuff is going to be reality based in the next couple of years. And this really, bad language alert, this really pisses me off because for 10 years I've been doing stuff, going onto the radio, people say, the government's announced this, and I'm going, no, that's not going to happen. And it's like just, you know, the bad news fairy is Damien Mosley. And again, today, it's disappointing that this is again is happening. So, again, I would rather Pat Rabbit being the minister than Eamon Ryan and Noel Dempsey. I think more will get done, and he'll push people like Comreg and those private companies. But this document today, and the fact that it needs to be done by 2015 is I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, you see, and that's how I feel, and I take your point about perhaps having more faith in Pat Rabbit. But when I read this document, these numbers read like a fairy tale. It reads like science fiction. And in fact, the minister and the department, in my view, loses credibility on that ground. Because and maybe it might be interesting to talk about and again, perhaps, I don't know if either Michele or yourself, Damien, can answer this, but exactly what kind of technological improvements or advances are we talking about that can give you this factor of improvement where your average maybe DSL speed in many places is, as you say, maybe around the 5 megabits, and we're talking about half the population in 2 years' time having between 70 and 100 megabits. And this, the last claim in it, it aggravates me and annoys me because a minimum of 30 megabits per second for every remaining home and business in the country, no matter how rural or remote. He may as well have promised us all a private jet.
Money is the answer, Con.
Pardon?
We don't have.
Say that again, Michele, sorry.
Money. The only way you can do this is through a huge money. It's not technology, it's money.
Well, you're not going to do it with.
Which we don't have.
You're not going to do it with 350 million, 50% of that coming from the public sector. Sorry, Michele, are you with us?
No, that's the entire thing. I am, yeah, sorry. The line's very bad. The thing is, I mean, Damien's point is so valid. You know, he can't get a decent connection, and he's living in Cork. I mean, he's not living out in the sticks up the side of a mountain with a bunch of goats. He's living in Cork City, the second largest city in the country, and he can't get a decent connection. My mother lives in East Cork, and her choices there are extremely limited. And to expect a private company to invest in the infrastructure needed to bring her that kind of speed, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I just don't see it. I mean, the metropolitan area networks, there's one in Carlow, which is lit now, and I'm able to get the fibre into the home. which is great. But when we wanted to get fibre into the offices in Carlow, we actually do a dig to get it across, because there was no joined up thinking. They didn't think to connect any of the business parks that were on the other side of the river. So you had one side of the river had the man, the other side had nothing. I mean, it would be great to think that this could happen, but I'm very, very cynical. I mean, we've still got clients who can't get anything beyond like 56K dial-up or maybe ISDN. For that to suddenly change over the next 3 years to get to the kind of 30 megabits type speed, I'd love to see it, but I'm very, very skeptical.
Damien, I saw you tweet today in response to this in response to this published strategy, this plan, as they're calling it, that came out today. You picked out the heading on demand stimulation, which has been one of the excuses for lack of broadband penetration in Ireland, both by companies and by governments who've said there's just no demand for it.
Yeah. And again, nearly 10 years ago at Ireland Offline, that was the excuse that Aircom pushed out. Then that Comreg replicated, and then the Department of Communications would say, stakeholders have said there's no demand. And we had, I guess, at one stage in Ireland Offline's forums on board, thousands of people saying, I want it, I'm in the centre. And it's just an excuse. It's just pushing something out like that, going, well, we'd love to give people broadband, but no one wants 30 meg broadband. No one wants 1 meg broadband. And the stories on the ground say the complete opposite. And when we've always pushed them saying, okay, show us the amount of people that have requested broadband and you've told them they can't get it because your line fails or, you know, you're not in the right area, we've never disclosed those numbers. And we always knew they were high. But yeah, to see that pop up again is absolutely ridiculous. They use the thing as well, people, you know, PC penetration in Ireland is low, and that's crap as well. They talk about an aging population, yet the same government later on say that, you know, we have the biggest number of people under 35 in Europe per capita. So it's excuse generation. And again, like, we've had, there's now a broadband task force, and I tweeted about this evening. Grey-haired old men coming up with decisions about broadband and sorting broadband, and they all work in the telecoms companies. So there's this big idea in regulation about regulatory capture, where the regulators are just locked into kind of a holding pattern where they're bamboozled by all these companies. And I think that's what we're seeing here.
The interesting thing is that I know a few grey-haired old men living and working and operating in isolated and rural areas of Ireland, and they thrive on and make a lot of use out of smartphones and Facebook and the like just now. So I think that you know, definitely things are changing. I think historically there may have been a thing where you know, and there still are, I imagine. I think it's safe to say, Damien, that there is a significant proportion of people out there who cannot imagine what they would do with 30 meg or even 100 megabit broadband. But equally, you know, to take refuge in that, and this is the point you're making, to take refuge in that statistic and say, well, there you go, there's no demand, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And the fact of the matter is that we're seeing it increasingly. If you give people the opportunity, if you make it available for them, they're transformed by it.
Yeah. The argument has always been, look, broadband is the best stimulator for broadband. If you give some people broadband, you know, file sizes increase, all that kind of stuff, and other people then will have to upgrade, you know. So it's that idea. It's the idea of computer upgrades, the whole Moore's cycle, like Moore's law. That's what you'll get. Just give some people broadband and other people get broadband as a result. They'll tell other people. They'll start using Skype. They'll encourage other people to use Skype. The same way, like, telephones encourage other people to get telephones. It becomes more efficient. And it's that kind of logic. And I do, as I was saying, I do a lot of training courses around the country. And I was in Clare there a little while back, and I did something in Killaloe. And they have that glass pavilion there now. And no wireless connection whatsoever. hardly any kind of mobile connection. There was some sort of limited broadband, but it was limited broadband. And this is you know, this is not in the sticks whatsoever. And this is a big tourist attraction and a lovely area. And a lot of time now when I'm giving trainings, say, with enterprise boards, they pick venues based on if there's broadband available or not. But they can't put courses on for some people or for other people. I've been on training courses with businesses, and some businesses tell me where the office is located, they can't get broadband. So people go home at lunchtime to download files for the company, and then they bring them back after lunch that they can process, or video files.
Oh, no.
Using the USB stick again to upload it.
Hmm.
This is Ireland in 2012.
Damien, just cutting across you there, I mean, our technical support team are supporting our customers across Ireland. I mean, we have people who constantly have issues with email and other services. And it's nothing to do with our end. It's literally because they're on such slow connections. You know, they have difficulty sending and receiving email. You see people talking about all these, you know, cool new services that are in the cloud and everything else. They can't use them. I mean, how can you access the cloud if you don't have a stable internet connection? It's madness.
Yep, it is. And again, and we have all these documents.
Then you also other people think,
you know, using your Gmail apps, your cloud apps, or whatever. And you're right. Like, there's a lot of companies that would love to do that, but they just can't do that. And they, again, they have the screeching sound of dial-up in the morning as they're checking their email, and they're hoping there's no large files being sent by people. It's a ridiculous situation if you want to compete against the rest of the world that are just jumping ahead of us again and again.
I mean, the thing with the mobile stuff as well, I mean, you know, like I use my mobile a lot when I'm out of the office. And, you know, between Carlow and Dublin, it dropped, the 3G disappears, I don't know how many times. That's on, you know, a main road.
You can't.
They can't even sustain 3G stably between Carlow and Dublin.
Hmm.
I mean, and this is, our variations of this are meant to be the thing that will, you know, sort out most rural areas. And, you know, someone is meant to get a 30 megabit connection from this 3G or 4G connection. It's hardly going to happen.
Like I say, guys, I'm not usually the cynic, but this has got to be the most galling and annoying publication I've seen in quite a while. And Damien, Pat Rabbit may well be the guy to kick butt on these kind of targets, but the targets are so unrealistic. This document is the fairy tale of the year, as far as I'm concerned. It's science fiction, and you know, if there is 30 meg broadband in my region, I won't even say Kilkee. Let's leave Kilkee out of it. If it's in Lissacessie or someplace like that, if it's in, you know, a reasonably built up, even I'll tell you, if there's 30 megabits in Ennis in 2 years' time, I'll be impressed.
And the information town that used to be Ennis.
Those were the days. Those were the days. But Damien, tell us. Oh, go ahead, Jim McKinney.
Just got, guys. No, just briefly. I posted on Twitter earlier just to see what people's reactions were to the announcement, and I just got back a few people around the country, and some of them are delighted they're able to get UPC. Other people are saying things like, in the same estate, neighbors can't get the same service because, you know, they've got the wrong kind of cables. Other people are saying, you know, they're stuck on 1 or 2 meg connections. And these are a lot of these people I know, they're living, you know, close to Cork or close to Dublin, and they can't get anything. Others are saying, well, anybody who can't get broadband, well, sure, can't they get satellite? Somebody else was saying that Aircom sold a modem to their 79-year-old non-PC owning father the other day to quote unquote reduce his bill. And what was the other one there? Hold on a second. Yeah, another guy saying that his speed varies between 2 and 3 megs. And Skype is practically unusable because the ping times are so bad.
It's no surprise, I think, to any of us anyway, that anyone that has tried to use broadband in this country, and especially outside the major centres. But we're going to come back on this, and this is definitely a document that I want to come back and talk about in the future, because I think it's one of the most unrealistic, speculative fantasies that I've seen in a very long time. Damien Mully, it's great to have you on. I think I'm not sure if you're the first person I don't think you're the first person we've had on twice, but
he's the first person.
Is he? Well, congratulations, and entirely appropriate, I think. Tell us what you're doing, Damien. In particular, you said you've been you're in a kind of a quiet period, but getting busy over the next couple of months.
Just before we get to that, could I do another one with G, another one of these podcasts in the future where we all drink?
Drink?
I drink at most during most of them, Damien.
Are you drinking now, Damien?
I wish, Con. I wish. as in this second, I don't have a glass in my hand now, no.
Yeah, you mean we could and sort of maybe have certain, like a drinking game, have certain cues, like, you know... like when we curse.
Yes, I'm up for that. You could get a co-sponsor in as well.
What, get a drink company into sponsor, is it?
Yeah.
That'd be definitely, I think there might be, that'd be definitely a different kind of show, I think.
Yeah.
We could have the drunken podcast.
Technology.ie After Dark Podcast.
Sounds good. Damien, you're doing the Irish Web Awards again. Third, fourth year this year?
Fifth year. This is the fifth year of the Web Awards, yeah. And normally what I do after 5 years of doing something is I stop it. So I don't think I'll do that. But 5 years. 4 years with Relex payments on board. So Movistar were the initial sponsors in the first year. So yeah, five good enough years as well. So it's November 1st this year, Mansion House again. It's just a great venue, and I work well with the staff there. And as I said, Relix are on board, and we've got a couple new categories this year: responsive design. We're looking at mobile as well, just because of the way the web's changing. So we've got a couple of technical awards, and good number of sponsors have come on board as well. So what we decided to do this year was almost have an early bird rate for sponsors. So if they get in early, that there's a cheaper rate, and then the actual rate goes up as you get closer to the awards as well.
It's kind of a Ryanair model.
Kind of a Ryanair model, yeah. And it also just it helps in terms of, you know, getting a little bit of money into the bank to start buying stuff in advance for the awards, instead of chasing people for what is sometimes months afterwards trying to get the money back or trying to get money off people are committed to sponsor.
Are you going to charge people to use the toilets?
I don't know about that now. Yes.
I presume Rick O'Shea is your MC again.
Rick is going to be the MC, yeah. It's just like, we do the social media awards together, we do the web awards together, and we did the measurement .ie conference earlier this year as well together, so we just get on well. Like there's certain people that I use again and again and again at these events, just because I know them and I trust them. So I'll just say I'm looking for this, and it gets done. Rick turns up, does his thing. If stuff goes wrong, like happens at every event, he can ad lib away as I run around trying to get stuff fixed. So it's a good kind of relationship like that. I got a sponsor that leaves me alone as well. Like the likes of Relex are just like, what do you need from us on the night? We'll come along. You know, is there anything else to do besides that? And no interference whatsoever. So it's good. So there's about 25 categories this year. And nominations are open a week. And I haven't checked the numbers, but in the first 2 days, we got about over 100 nominations. So it's pretty busy already. And nominations are open until the 14th of September.
What happens then?
What happens then is it all gets put into the judging system. We'll probably be looking for a lot of judges. We had about 100 judges last year. I'd say we need about 120 this year. Anyone can be a judge. If you use the web, you can be a judge, and you can judge a website. Now, for some of the technical awards, we obviously have people that know their stuff. Would
you also judge. Published the scorecards as well for last year, didn't you, the other day?
Yeah.
I had hoped to publish them last year, but they were meant to come out about 2 weeks after the awards last year. And just, I guess, well, not real life, but real business got in the way, and I just left them aside. So as I opened up the Web Award system for nominations and all that this year, I just put the scorecards up on the Web Awards website. So you can see scores for round one for top six websites, and then you can see the scores for round two as well for everyone that got into the final. So you can see where they did well or where they did poorly. So that gives you just an idea of, if you are submitting something, what the standard is going to be like. And we've promised this for a while, and there's been the usual conspiracy theories about why I haven't put up the scorecards after giving out about other awards, not like disclosed scores. But it's just been laziness, really, on my side. But they're there now, and hopefully this year as well, that we'll have the scores for nearly every website that gets judged will eventually go up as well. It just makes it a little more transparent. So yeah, it's good. I'm happy with that. It's something I wanted to do for a while.
Is it too early to book tickets for attending the event?
It's, tickets will be €30 this year, like last year. I don't want to put tickets on sale too far in advance, because what I've had before is when tickets go on sale early, people buy tickets, they don't get into the final, and then they get on to me asking me for refunds and things like that. And even when you put up a notice saying you won't get a refund if you're looking for a refund, they still get on about it, and then they ask for you to resell the ticket or allocate their tickets to someone else and all that kind of messy stuff. So I said, we'll wait until maybe this October before we put ticket sales up there.
Okay, so watch this space. Watch what space, Damien? Where's the website?
So the website is webawards.ie. Excellent. And we have a new logo and all that stuff coming this year as well. We're focusing on the W, I think, as the main kind of design element.
Very good. Well, listen, thanks for coming on. We've definitely got to have you back on again soon, Damien, and maybe do that drinking show as well, or, you know, sort of spin it off in some kind of a new direction. I think we should probably also get together in 2 years' time on the deadline in 2015, or I suppose two and a half years' time in 2015, and enjoy our 30 meg minimum broadband connections, and, just enjoy a full bandwidth experience.
Using hologram Skype or something like that. Yeah.
And then, you know what we should do? We should play this show back and listen to ourselves going, because that's what it sounds like. And I really do feel like we're in the stone age of broadband right now. This is the most ridiculous report or plan that I've read in a very long time. If he pulls it off, I don't know. I mean, the guy should be Pope or something. But it's definitely one of the most fantastic documents that I've seen in a very long time. Damien Mulley the Damien Mulley, I guess you could say. There you go. Web Awards and lots of other cool stuff. Thanks for joining us on technology.ie. Michele, good luck to yourself. I'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you then. And thanks, Damien, for coming on with us this week.
Okay, guys. Thanks a lot. Slán go fóir. All right, lads. Well done.
I stuck it up on the document there, but the NFL just did a status update to their 6.1 million fans off Squelga.
What? Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, this is actually on the official NFL Facebook page.
Yeah.
Tá an NFL in Gaelge arash agus díreach an am, will tú va a chosnín an sésur amach in Isla. Okay, that's a little bit of nonsense, Gaelge, there, definitely in the second sentence, but the first one makes perfect sense. Very interesting. And there's a whole lot of people.
You have to translate it for me, Colin.
Well, the first sentence says the NFL in Irish is back and just in time. And then the next line says nothing. It's like nonsense. In fact, somebody in the comments further down has said Cúnas Bóthair Cailín Bainne. So it's it's definitely the first sentence makes sense. The second one has been badly done by Google Translator or Yahoo Translator or something, whatever it is. That's a cool one. And did you put in that link as well, Damien, for facebook.com/corporatebollocks?
Yeah, it's this. Someone set up this. It's taking it based on basically corporate brands on Facebook, like doing stupid updates, like this or share this if you've been a child ever before.
Oh, come on, Damien, it's your page, admit it.
I wish it was. I tweeted the other night when it had 254 fans, and I think it's up at 2,500 now or something.
6,331.
But what they've started doing as of yesterday is they're now sharing status updates from corporate pages, taking the piss out of them. So I think there's going to be a takedown on this page fairly soon. So, like... Was it their? Who's the one that they're taking the piss out of at the moment?
This is actually quite a fun page.
They're sharing loads of them, and some of the updates are fantastic. It's like, you know,
the conversation one was hilarious. The one about the I'm going to post something on your Facebook page instead of using the 20 methods for contacting your support staff that are publicly available. Or something. I can't remember the exact wording. It's very funny.
There's an interest,
and everyone just started contributing their own comments under that as well. Like, and it was like, I think it was at 25 comments by people of just what people are like. I'm going to share this with all my friends as well. Oh yeah, here's when they're taking a piss out of Holiday Inn, going, "Damn you, Holiday Inn, for stealing our thunder. We were going to do a post like this with a heart shaped emoticon with people standing in the middle as your customers."
They're attributing some of the content that they're posting then, like, for example, a big thanks to our friends at Fucking Annoying TV Advert with Cartoon Singing 70s Shit Song Insurance for this. We, like, totally copied and pasted it from their page and everything. This is going down as the NSFW show. I think we've got a title for this week's show, Michele. And actually, this last 5 minutes, I'm just tacking it on the end of the show because
technology daddy, fuck yeah.